think of life in Rozhdestvenskaya.
The days of the week may seem difficult to remember at first, but you have to learn them sooner or later.
Pizza.
Nedelia. Ponedelia.
Erasmus on Air.
Hi everyone. You are listening to a fresh episode of Erasmus on Air. As you might know, the Erasmus program has expanded tremendously since it was established in 1987. Whether this is a good thing will be discussed in one of the forthcoming episodes. This time we'll be dealt with growth in another sense, or to be more precise, with degrowth. Although thoughts which are related to the concept of degrowth are almost as old as industrialization processes themselves, as far as I know, the term itself was coined only in 1972. It was André Gortz, who usually published in French, that wrote about décroissance. The time in which the concept came into emergence says much about what it is about. Gortz was a prominent theorist within the New Left. After 1968 and the realization that much of the New Left's ideals had not obtained a hegemonic position in society during the momentum the student revolts for a while had seemed to be, its actors kept looking for ways to improve their lives and those of others. Especially after the emergence of different points of view between Gortz and other frequent contributors to the famous French journal Les Temps Modernes, the former started to focus on new research directions. The main result of this was his turn to political ecology. By now, degrowth can be termed one of the most frequently used concepts within this research field. Both in the term and within political ecology are political, economic, social, and environmental issues highly connected. So, what is degrowth really about? For instance, the Club of Degrowth puts our life and those of future generations center stage in their activities. Following advocates of degrowth, the by now traditional economic doctrine of constantly striving for growth, more production and thus more consumption, needs to come to a halt. This routine namely maintains and increases inequality of all kinds, and it destroys the earth. Worries like these can be collected under the umbrella term limits of growth. This was also the name of an, similar to the coining of the term degrowth, in 1972 published report commissioned by the Club of Rome. The report was not only noteworthy for the approach which had led to its content, a computer model was used to shed light on what to expect in the future. It was as well noteworthy for what was stated in it. In a very basic sense, its conclusions were that if human mankind would continue with what it was doing, we would in the 21st century be confronted with both economic and societal collapse, and then those of the serious kinds were meant. For current degrowers, it is a similar perspective that raises their concerns. Moreover, one could argue that such collapse is nearby. The last week published World Inequality Report, in which among others Emmanuel Saas and Thomas Piketty were involved in, gives the argument the French economist was making in his well-known study Capital in the 21st Century even more body. In the report it showed that income inequality has increased in nearly all world regions in recent decades. When it comes to income, the Middle East is estimated to be the most unequal region in the world. But as mentioned, there are other worries, which often especially are related to the environment and thus global warming. As we speak, the Arctic ice is melting rapidly, and thus advocates of degrowth are of the opinion that the moment to change is now. So what is it that they aim at? The aforementioned Club of Degrowth has described it as follows. It is the intentional redirection of economies away from the perpetual pursuit of growth. This will mean a planned and controlled contraction to get back in line with planetary boundaries, with the eventual creation of a steady-state economic system that is in balance with Earth's limits, once the degrowth process finishes and a stable population level is achieved. In a figure on the club's webpage, degrowth is thus not the final stage of such a process. This is namely supposed to be the stage of no growth, or, as they also put it, a sustainable society. It is also important to mention that we shouldn't confuse degrowth with recession, which is in essence a process characterized by less of the same. Degrowth is on the contrary about doing something in another way. The fact that advocates of degrowth are favoring a controlled economic process usually results in harsh critiques from market fetishists, who stupidly enough are arguing something like that if there is one thing we shouldn't want, it is to revive Stalinist practices. That the market as such has basically served as the breeding ground for much problems with which we are faced now is thereby, as usual, not acknowledged. Moreover, the market forms a serious threat for practices of degrowth of all kinds. I will later elaborate on this. But I guess it's about time to make a start with discussing how degrowth initiatives actually look like in practice. It is not unlikely that such practices are already part of your daily routine. In essence, every decision to use public transport instead of your car, or even better, taking your bike or just walk, is part of a process in which you resist against the biggest wish of oil companies, that we use their commodity every time we move from one place to another. But degrowth practices are usually not only about individual choices and behavior, but have an essentially social or collective character. Cool examples are to be found close to home. Here in Slovenia, a project by the initiative Dovolj za vse, which means enough for all, is aiming at helping local communities to develop a more sustainable way of life through both workshops and longer training cycles. With this project, we however touch on a first field of tension that is connected to degrowth. To let degrowing practices grow has a somewhat paradoxical character. Always when existing bottom-up projects are confronted with in essence more top-down approaches, there are thus issues which are worth paying attention to. A question worth asking is, for example, who the actors behind the top-down initiative are. By the way, in the mentioned Slovenian example can be said that it and its partner organizations are on the good side. But very often EU money is behind such initiatives, and that same EU and its member states are, to put it mildly, not very critical of initiatives as, for example, Airbnb, which are, so to say, kidnapping practices that in essence are highly related to degrowth. They are namely economizing and putting a huge burden on just letting someone stay in your home at times you are not using it yourself. We do not need more and more and always more.
Look, I'm gonna give you a count off and the rest of you guys come on in when I tell you.
Oh, After working for so many years, then you look back and see nothing that you have achieved, and your ambition has reached its peak. Still this cruel world seems cold. Man, what you need is sweet words of confidence and your encouragement to the end. What you need is a helping hand.
This was Simon and Kipski with More is Less. Let us continue with discussing more degrowing practices. The philosophy behind degrowth has a lot in common with the reason why people all over the world decide to squat unused buildings to keep cities and villages livable. It is therefore quite logical that squatting and good examples of degrowing practices go hand in hand. Probably one of the best and most well-known examples of this is Can Masdéu in the Collserola National Park, very near to Barcelona. The squat was established in 2002, at first instance to host an international meeting of activists on climate change. A group of people decided to stay, and among other things, they started to grow their own food there and thus created what they themselves call a Urbano Social Center. 4 months after the start, an eviction attempt by the police took place, which failed as a result of non-violent resistance. It were not only inner city actors from the established social movements of Barcelona that offered an helping hand, but as well neighbors who saw and see the Collserola National Park, so to say, getting eaten up by an expanding city. From 2002 onwards, the people at Can Masdéu have not only developed degrowth practices at their own spot, but as well played an important role in the establishing of a network of rural squatting and the Cooperativa Integral Catalana, a cooperative that focuses on, among others, the exchange of organic food in Catalunya and which consists of several hundred members. Can Masdéu is very good is a very good example of how ideas behind the community aspect of degrowth can look like in practice. For instance, during their tours through the valley, they do not only explain to visitors what they are doing, but as well try to learn from them. This strategy also forms the base of the community gardens, in which over 100 locals have built a community which together has a huge amount of knowledge on how best to grow fruits and vegetables organically. But there's much more than Canmas Deu in Europe, the continent on which is focused in this episode for the sake of this being the show Erasmus on Air. In Germany is currently not only urban gardening trending, but it is as well a good example of how big the degrowth movement at the moment is. I think it's the country in which degrowth is most institutionalized, thereby leaving the question open whether or not this is a good thing. Very likely, related to the whole Energiewende hype, a network of party academic institutions has been set up to do research on and spread the word about degrowth. It is thereby good to see that within such discourses, it is emphasized that by individuals formed collectives should have the agency to establish degrowth practices the way they want it. Because doing something with degrowth is not at all a standard practice. In this sense, the book Degrowth, A Vocabulary for a New Era, is worth mentioning. During a session at the Faculty of Social Sciences last week, Giacomo D'Alisa, who is one of the editors of the book, explained that with the help of this vocabulary, everyone can construct her or his own degrowth story and connect this to those of others. One of the aspects of the macro story of degrowth that was highlighted by D'Alisa was the idea of post-normal science. That is, there should be a transition within the process of academic publishing in times when facts are uncertain, values are in dispute, stakes are high, and decision urgent, to quote him. One or two peer reviewers, as is common now, should become an extended peer community. According to D'Alisa, a shift from decisions by communities of experts to decisions by expert communities is needed, and this not only in academia, but in every layer of society. A group of doctors probably knows better how basic problems within healthcare systems can be tackled than some politician who all of a sudden ends up being the Minister for Health. The mentioned expert communities, of course, consist of multiple people who have knowledge of or experience with something and are united by this. If you feel like contributing to the establishing of such communities, just think about what you like and can and make it happen. I would say do it now, before it's too late.
What do you think of life in Rojnodevica?
The days of the week may seem difficult to remember at first, but you have to learn them sooner or later.
Paper, Nedelia. Ponedelia.
Erasmus on Air.